Okay, can everybody hear me? And we're getting quieter, so I think that means we can. So good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the informative breakout session, Donor Advised Fund and Investment Proposal Process. My name is Anthony Keeler with Mission Mutual, in case it doesn't give it away, working as the Operations and Systems Analyst with Mission Mutual. So. Given that they have turned the temperature down to like 55 in here, and with it being the end of the day, I'll try not to keep us too long, and we can get out and go feel the warmth of the sunlight and whatnot. And so happy that each of you are here. We're so glad that each of you are here. Can't wait to hopefully share a little bit of information, try to answer as many questions as we can, walk through an RFP together. Hopefully that will help as well, so that at least one of you walks out of this door thinking, hey, that session was actually kind of worth it. But more than anything, we're just so glad that you're here. I've been told that a fun fact helps break the ice. So a fun fact about me is I have hair, unlike some of the presenters. I guess a better fun fact about me is that ice cream makes me sleepy for whatever reason. It's a blessing and a curse, I guess. So, ice cream makes me sleepy. So, with that segue, we're going to go into the Donor Advised Fund and Investment Proposal Process. So, I'm going to kind of keep it at a high level, try to build on the overview that's already been established. I'm certainly not going to try to repeat word for word everything that's been said before. That wouldn't be a very productive time, nor do I have the gift of speaking like Dal does, those of you that know him. And so, let's go ahead and dive in. So, what's a DAF? Oh, and I should mention that I'm speaking into a microphone. Not that you can't hear me, but this is being recorded. And so if you're interested in a recording after the session, then we'll have those available probably at the end of the week so that you can go back and listen to my wonderful voice, I guess, for this session. But that is why I'm speaking into a microphone. So what is a DAF? So as you know, DAF represents the E10 Donor Advised Fund. It's kind of a central repository of investments directed towards the Bible translation efforts to achieve the all-access goals within the E10 Collective Impacts Alliance. You've already hopefully been familiar or heard that the DAF points towards translation tools, quality assurance in Bible translation, and then organizational development to strengthen the effect or the efforts of national organizations. Hopefully that's not new news to you, but those are the kind of the big purposes that make up the DAF, what it's for and what it goes to. As both Catherine and Dal and Todd have have mentioned, there's not a formal budget. What flows in, flows out. There's nothing that's kept or left over or anything like that. By a show of hands, before hearing about the E10 Donor Advised Fund, how many had heard of a Donor Advised Fund at all beforehand? So quite a few, right? Great. So I don't have to get into the nitty-gritty mechanics, but it's a really cool idea to help foster the efforts and the impact of E10 Collective Impact Alliance. So. What's the oversight look like of the DAF? So, as we know, every tribe, every nation is an alliance of Bible translation organizations, right? So, this represents one of the many or multiple investments, purposes, and streams directed at Bible translation. Mission Mutual, which Dallas shared a little bit about what we do, well, part of the administering and supporting role helps us connect with the Donor Advised Fund, or the DAF. The resource partners have course, the authority, the direction, decision-making autonomy for the DAF. We're simply coming alongside and behind as administrators and supporters. So even though I am giving this presentation, I do not, I certainly do not write the checks or have the power to deem otherwise. But Mission Mutual, as the backbone organization in our support of E10, allows us to partner really closely with the Donor Advice Fund. And I should mention that there's going to be a time for Q&A at the end. So if you have a question, write it down or hold on to it, and then we'll dive in towards the end of the presentation. So, investment strategy and focus, continuing our overview of the DAF. You've all seen that the investment strategies that make up E10, specifically with the Donor Advice Fund, you know, are these five things of, you know, the big one of better quality, faster, cheaper, Bible translation. Some of the other ones that are just as important are things like innovation, things like operational transformation, things like common platforms, collaboration, sharing. All of these things are not words on a screen or idea, you know, general ideas. They really are impactful in the way that E10 makes and decides and prayerfully considers with great care the decision making of the DAF and the investment streams and how to partner, where to partner, what to partner. All of these things are really key and helpful in advancing, you know, the strategy, the focus of E10. And again, going towards the focus, we've mentioned Bible translation, translation tools, quality assurance in Bible translation, and organizational development to help further the growth and effect of local or national organizations. You'll keep hearing me hammer that home because it's critical and it's really important, and it drives the investment strategy and focus of the DAF. So, as a visual representation, you might have seen this displayed much more eloquently or prettier in the slides in the general session, but individuals, foundations, the resource partners, funds flow in to the Donor Advice Fund. From the Donor Advice Fund, then it flows directly to the implementing partners, the 10 agencies listed here, and as you've seen before, and then from there flows to downstream to field partners, all the way down to the local most local expression of the church, right? So hopefully, again, that's not new, but it's revisiting or confirming what's been shared before and what you now know. So that was real high-level overview of the Donor Advice Fund, what it is. We'll circle back to it later. But the second half or if there is such a thing as a big draw to this session, is the investment proposal process. So we're going to dive into that now and kind of walk through step by step what the process looks like, how it takes place over the course of a year, and the stages involved. So with that being said, there is no RFP process or investment proposal process for translation. Those funds are sent out and distributed based on percentages that are determined through the work with progress.bible on the work that each implementing partner is doing. So for translation tools, for quality assurance, and for organizational development, we'll kind of focus on the investment proposal process for those three. So when I say RFP, stands for request for proposal, as you'll hear me refer to it later and throughout the presentation. So here you'll see that there's about seven kind of neatly defined stages or phases of the investment proposal process. You've got distribution, progress, updates, invitation, submission, consideration, and notification. Right? So what do those look like? So starting in about January, so E10's year, or budget year, if you want to call it, runs from January to December. So it matches up real nicely with the calendar year. So starting in January, we'll have distribution. At the start of the year, that's when investment allocations are initiated and where they'll begin on a monthly cycle throughout the year. Following that, then let's check in with progress. So around mid-year, it's a time to check in and an update report, so to speak, of, you know, how's it going for the first 6 months of the investments that you've received? How do they compare with milestones and deliverables that you've established? A really big part of the request for proposal is establishing the milestone, the expected milestones, the expected deliverables. You know, what do we hope to accomplish with this tool, this program, these efforts that we're undertaking as an organization? So usually about halfway throughout the year, the contact will be made through to get an update report, just to check in and see how things are going. And then following that, we have updates. Now this says July to August, just like with the progress update. These updates can happen not just in July and August, but throughout the year. E10 is really, it prides itself on staying connected and making sure that, you know, we're constantly communicating. It's not a distribute at January and then talk to you again in August and then talk to you again in December, but connecting and having a conversation through video, through on-site, through phone, through, I haven't yet had one through Facebook or Twitter, but the way things are going, that probably happens soon. So, but just constant communication and updates and wanting to check in, both at the formal progress update that happens in July and August, as well as throughout the year, of just a phone call. Hey, how's it going? How's the program? How's the tool developing? All of these things. So, invitation. Invitation typically takes place in August of the year. As I mentioned earlier, the RFPs, or the requests for proposals, are sent out at that time. And we'll walk through a sample RFP here in a little bit, but August is when it will be distributed, or the invitation will be distributed for the following year. Then in September, usually around September, beginning of October, we'll ask for those back. So that's when submission will take place. Once those RFPs have been completed and vetted, then they'll be sent to Mission Mutual, where we will receive those to prepare to present those to the resource partners for their consideration. So again, part of our role as being administrators, working with administrating and supporting, is receiving all of those and then presenting those for the resource partners to review, typically September or October, leading to consideration. The resource partners review and decide on the investment proposals around that time. This is an incredible source of praise and progress that this now says October for the coming year, because there's those in the room that know that it did not used to say October. It used to say January, December, which, as you can imagine, planning for the year and receiving that kind of information December 31st or January 8th makes a bit of a difference, right? And so this is a huge praise and worthy of celebration that's now October, and that this takes place in September. And you know, when you have close to $40 million flowing out each year, then that makes a difference to know in September or October. And we're working to improve on this. What I'm presenting to you today is the process as it stands right now, but if we can get to a place and get to through partnership and collaboration to where this becomes August or this becomes July, then fantastic. Let's do it. Let's go for it. It'll free up October for the next thing to come along. So, but right now, consideration takes place in October. Following consideration, you'll have notification. So notification typically takes place in November. It's where the implementing partners are notified of investment decisions by the resource partners taking place in November. We try to get that out in November so that, as we all know, Thanksgiving and then December into Christmas is an incredibly hectic time. And so getting those out as soon as we can is our priority, is the priority of E10 and the resource partners, and is one that, these are things that are supposed to help. And that's what we're aiming for, and that's what we're hoping for, and that's what we want, is to help. So that's a really quick flyby of the investment proposal process. We can start with questions now, or if it would be helpful, I have an activity where at your tables I can pass out a request for proposal as well, but I'll stop now for questions on a real quick flyby at a high level of a little bit of what we've talked about with the DAF, but the investment proposal process as well.
All right, Anthony, thank you. Is there anything limiting you from sending out the request for proposal before August? Because a month may be too quickly to turn around.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. That's a really good question. So part of the influence of sending those out in August with a turnaround in September, that's a really big point of feedback that we received this year is, hey, a month is really quick, really hard to turn around. How can we improve that? So part of the influence of that August timeline is receiving the progress updates around July or August. And so once we get those in, then typically, historically, our next step has been to then send out the RFPs for the coming year. As we continue to evolve and update and grow, then possibly in the future, then it might be sending out the RFPs with the progress updates. It might be sending out the RFPs before the progress updates. It might be sending, it might be asking for the progress updates earlier. We've just kind of done it at the midway point of the year because it's a normal, natural point to catch up or connect and see how it's going for that year. But as we continue to partner better and to connect better and to connect closer, then maybe a formal progress update takes place earlier in the year, or it takes place over the regularly occurring conversations that we have on an informal level. So it's not quite a very good answer to your question, but it is something that we are aware of, and providing greater time for the request for proposals to be turned around is incredibly important to us, to myself personally, but more importantly to those that are having to fill it out, because 30 days is not very much time, as we all know. So that's not a full answer, but it's the best I can do right now.
This year we filled out our Bible translation tool proposals for a two-year period. Mm-hmm. Are you going to pay out or make a commitment for a two-year, or are we going to kind of every year do a two-year running proposal?
Right. Thanks, Paul. That's a... I'll let Stu do that. Right. So Paul has intimate knowledge with the process, knowing that this year is the first year that we've kind of asked for 2 years. Historically, since 2010... E10 has operated on a year-by-year basis, as I've walked through, of making decisions year-by-year. Well, this past year, this current year, we asked for multiple years for the very first time in the history of E10 ever. We, instead of asking for just 2020, we asked for 2020 and 2021. And, why would you do that? Why would you ask for 2020 and 2021? Well, that's because we're moving towards a place of being able to reduce the turnaround and the stress on those filling it out of, okay, instead of year by year, can we get better at forecasting? Can we get better at planning? Can we get better at communicating so that we can request for 2 years or 3 years at a time, to then eventually to the point where the resource partners can make decisions 1 or even 2 years at a time. This year they've continued to stay with making decisions 1 year at a time, but since we already have the information for 2021, then perhaps that might lead to decisions being made earlier, which is, yeah, it's a praise, yay, kind of, you know. And so we did ask for 2 years with the hope that eventually we can move to a 2 or 3 year cycle rather than a year over year cycle to help reduce the workload, help reduce the stress, as well as improve our own processes.
Anthony, you talked about consideration period in October. Mm-hmm. Can you talk at all, can you give any detail on how specifically proposals are evaluated, how either formal or informal the process is?
Sure. Thank you for asking, Steve. So requests for proposals, the RFPs that are turned in, are received by Mission Mutual. And then we present them to the resource partners, right? That's a high-level overview. Well, a step or a couple steps down from that means receiving the RFPs, pooling them to one report or two or three reports based on how many are received, to then present it to the resource partners for an initial review or an initial, I don't want to say like a movie trailer or a sneak peek, but presented so that they're aware of it. And then there's a further meeting and evaluation where they dive a little bit deeper, and then another one where it's full on from anywhere from 50,000 feet to in the weeds to anywhere in between. And so there's levels of review that take place within that month time where when making the consideration decisions, receiving all of the raw data, presenting it in a easily digestible, medium digestible, and a heavy digestible, if you follow the metaphor, but kind of another three-step process of not just simply receiving and then resource partners reading over hundreds and hundreds of pages of data, but doing it in segments, as well as small, medium, and large size chunks, so that consideration decisions are easier in that they can become familiar with small, through those three stages of becoming familiar, becoming more familiar, becoming even more familiar, so that they themselves can say with certainty when making consideration decisions, these programs, these tools, whatever it may be, these closely follow, align, fall into the investment strategy and focus of the donor advice fund. They fall into what E10 has laid out as the intent and purposes of the donor advice fund, and that they themselves can become intimately familiar with each and every RFP, each and every line of the RFP. The resource partners are incredibly knowledgeable about about the RFPs that come in. Through that kind of those checks and balances. Does that, am I anywhere close to helping answer your question, Steve? Okay. Any others?
How much do the resource partners like to see other involvement in these projects from other sources?
Ooh, great question. They love to see collaboration throughout the RFPs. So as you and your colleagues and your organization considers RFPs, collaboration is a shiny gold star. It's a huge driving force in what the resource partners are hoping to see, because, you know, as we talked about with the investment strategy and focus, collaboration, sharing of and innovation, operational transformation, all of those things, you know, the first one listed was collaboration. And so to answer your question, Paul, they love to see collaboration, partnering with other agencies, partnering with local organizations, partnering with the church, any and all of the three. They are incredibly interested and excited to see that when that happens. Aiden, I think you had a question.
All right, so very similar to what he just said, his question that just was saying, talking about the collaboration within the partners. So I wanted to know, Mission Mutual really, really has the partner with us with very limited timeline? How is it that you guys are able to do that, to take that time to communicate with the other partners, and then also that have the common goals to write these RFPs? Because if we have such a short time span, then when the process is occurring 1 month before, and then we miss the deadline, how can my organization then catch up within that 1 week? You see, so there you have that whole discrepancy within the 3 weeks versus the 1 week. So that deadline of having to meet that. So how can Mission Mutual then maybe encourage us to meet those deadlines a little bit easier?
That's a really good question, Stu. I'm going to do my best to try to answer your question, Aiden, but I don't have the perfect answer. I would encourage you to seek out Dal, because I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of Mission Mutual, but Mission Mutual, for those that don't know, started in January of 2018, so we're a little over a year old, just barely almost 2 years old. So we're not necessarily new to E10, but Mission Mutual itself is new. And so how can we better encourage DBS or whomever it is in throughout the RFP process? A lot of that involves our own growth and better continuing to evolve and develop the process itself. A good example would be we, for the first time this year, asked for 2 years at a time. That'll hopefully be a really good relief point so that it's not necessarily year over year and it's not quite as compacted, but that it can hopefully stretch out a little bit. The stress and the idea of turning it around in 30 days, what we're going to try to do for a whole year. But we can have that continued context, we can have that foundation set so that moving forward we can say, okay, for instance, next year, here's what you mentioned last year. Are there any changes or updates? If it's just a minor one, then great. We have time to continue to communicate and talk and develop. If there's any other changes, then great. We'll already be aware of that because we'll have the continued progress update or continued conversations. We'll have the progress update. I think that's a little bit to answer your question as far as a better, fuller, missiologic and philanthropic reality answer to that question. I'd encourage you to speak to Dal, because missiologic and philanthropic are two of his favorite words.
Did that answer the question?
Any other questions? All right, so I have here a sample RFP for the translation tools. So I've got one for each table. This will be a chance, if you haven't already, to see what an RFP looks like and how it takes place. At the table, I'm going to hand them out. As a table, feel free to go through and look at it. This is an example one that I created, you'll also notice that it's not completed, because the idea here is, after the things that we've talked about, after the process that we've talked about, the things that we've shared at the general session, talk about, what would make a good RFP, or what would be good, deliverables, what would, knowing the process, knowing the intent, the investment strategy at the donor advised fund, what would make a good RFP, at your table for whatever the case may be. I have an example one in there from Peter and the Apostles. You can build off of that one if you want, but feel free to join together and dream up, you know, what's a good RFP, what makes a good RFP, things like that. So Stu and I will be here to float around and help or answer any questions. But if there aren't any other questions, then I'll go ahead and pass these out, and we can talk about it in maybe 15 minutes or so. Then I'll come back up here and close this out, and then we can be on our way to dinner, which I know is a really big motivation. So, okay. I am going to close this out, but just because I'm kind of closing out, that does, please feel free to continue your discussions at your tables. If you've thought of any other questions, then now we can answer questions as well. But again, feel free to continue the conversations that are already going. These are really good conversations to keep going. I hope that this session has been somewhat informative. You get a brief snapshot into what the investment proposal process looks like. We're going to keep improving, keep evolving, and as a look ahead, we're hoping to integrate from, or not integrate, we're hoping to move on from paper applications into the coming everytribeeverynation.org website, being a portal to access the investment proposal process, to check in, to report on, to provide updates, kind of moving in an online portal environment, and continuing to improve. Request for proposals was a new thing to E10, introduced in 2018. So this is the second year that it's taken place. As we continue on each year, we'll get better and better and improve on the timeline and whatnot. And so I hope it's been informative. I'm going to pause for any other questions that Sue and I can handle. And
so the first question that we had is, will this form likely change year to year? And the question embedded in that is, if the form is not going to change, then we have an entire year to have these conversations as opposed to 30 days.
Right on the money, Mel. So to answer her first question, the large portion of these of this RFP, of the format, is not going to change. A lot of what the information requested and desired is going to continue to be requested and desired. You know, things like program name, collaboration points, descriptions, deliverables, milestones, costs, all of those things are going to continue to be asked. The only changes to the form might be minor in format or scope, but the larger part of it is it will not change drastically. And then, to answer your second question, heck yeah, it gives you more time to talk about it and develop and plan and come prepared, ready to rock and roll. Maybe August next year, maybe sooner. But does that answer your question?
In previous years, the RFPs have come at different times, like the one for the translation tools or for quality assurance. Mm-hmm. Are we understanding correctly that these are now all going to come at the same time?
Right. So Melva's hitting all the right questions here. This was the first year that capacity development through quality assurance and organizational development, RFP, took place. We started the RFP process in 2018 with just for translation tools. Capacity development started for the first time in 2019, and a point of feedback is you guys got hammered with requests for proposals for quality assurance and organizational development and translation tools, and that's a lot of paperwork and legwork and discussion to take place. Moving forward, it will take place one time, so you're not going to get hammered with three different RFPs over the course of 3 or 4 months, but it will take place once for the year or for 2 or 3 years at that time.
This is our last question from our table.
Keep it going.
On the form, you note the investment opportunity. And then also the total calendar year cost.
Mm-hmm.
Can you flesh those out a little bit for us and the difference?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. So the investment opportunity is essentially what are you inviting E10 to invest in or contribute towards, and then how does that compare to the total cost? Are they one and the same, or are do you already have other sources? I think one of the questions you'll see on there is, are there other sources of funding involved or lined up or what have you for this tool, for this program? So if there are other funding, then what is the percentage or what's the invitation for E10 of the total calendar year cost? Because they might be the same, or they might be, it might be half of the total year calendar cost, it might be 25%. So as you know, E10 continues to evolve and develop, as the each implementing partner continues to evolve and develop, then what is the invitation for E10, or what is the dependency on E10 for that program and that tool year over year or over the course of 3 years? So kind of breaking it out of what's the invitation versus what's the total calendar year cost, because that's another consideration that the resource partners consider, if I'm being redundant on myself, that they consider in their decision making. I know it's getting to the end of the day, so we're almost there, but.
If I'm remembering right, the process this year included some indication of how much would be available for each one of the categories of RFPs. So resource partners met beforehand, they determined what a total amount would be, they divided that, or maybe they just had a total amount and they didn't segment it out. But I think what happened was, as the proposals came through, they found that there were many opportunities that they were interested in supporting, and they actually changed the total amount in order to really seize on those things that they saw as high value and they really wanted to support. So that indicates to me that there's a degree of flexibility in that process. I assume it could also go the other way. They set aside, you know, $10 million, they get a bunch of proposals in, they like one of them and it's for $250,000, and they keep the rest of the funds and they don't support anything else even though they have money available. Am I right in assuming that they might still make those types of decisions? They're under no obligation to give the full $10 million in that example.
Right, so I appreciate you bringing that up, Bill. Based on the incredible efforts that are already taking place, I would be very surprised if they only like one out of the 10, you know, to use your example. But it is, well, it helps me hit it out of the park. So there is a degree of flexibility. So the resource partners in E10 does not go into each year saying, okay, we're only going to give this much for translation tools, this much for quality assurance, this much for organizational development. They have a general idea, again, through the continued conversations, through the context, through the RFPs coming in years past, of what might happen, what could be expected, but there is flexibility for increase or decrease, but the decrease does not mean that the money sits in the donor advised fund. As I mentioned earlier, the funds flow from the individuals, foundations, and resource partners into the DAF and through the DAF. It doesn't sit there. The DAF does not have a balance that rolls over from year to year. Historically, what's contributed to the DAF flows out of the DAF. And so if there's ever an opportunity or an instance where the expected investment does not match what the actual investment is, then that might be the case for that one program, but that might also open another opportunity to, in quality assurance or in translation tools, to pour more in that couldn't all be met based on the expectations at the beginning of the year. Okay, again, feel free to continue the conversations as we finish up here. Thank you again for coming, and dinner starts at 6 o'clock.